The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Hey, hey, hey you. It's the Artist D here, and I just wanted to tell you that Mr. Frank Cotolo, the Frank, is on right now.
You are listening to Cotolo Chronicles.
The Frank is on. The Frank is on. The Frank is on. The Frank is on.
You're kidding. The donut lady has other stuff too. The donut lady has napkins.
I'm scared as hell.
And now, on with the show!
Now?
From
song
New...
song was written by Fred Ebb and John Candy.
Shut up!
That's just a piece of the pie!
I couldn't have said it better!
It's a theater with a lot of pow. P-O-W, I mean pow. And now it's time to put the pow right now. P-O-W, that means pow.
Correct. Philosophical entertainment. Relevant irreverence. Netherati, couple surfers, netaholics, and infomaniacs. Unite. Tonight. Postmodernists, the Bard of Broadcasting is on the air. Everyone, raise your hands. Let me see a show of hands. Let me see a show of knees and other various parts. Clip it, baby. Sunburnt sickleman. Wake up. It's night. You have no more time. Imagine the truth. You have no more time. Get off of Facebook and get off of Twitter and come on in.
My name is Frank Cotolo, man, fame, but don't the title of the show. That's what happens when you make it up as you go along. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. You know, I should have echo when I do that. It's only been, what, 15 years? I should have echo and just yell that out. I should have somebody produce that for me. But, you know, it's not a show that needs production. We are the words, there's no script. The words, the thoughts, and the heart and the soul carry us through every week as we do. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show. I'm the one who chroniclers. I am the chronicle. I'm the one who chronicles. I am the chronicler. I've been a little bit, for some reason or another, out of step with myself since, I don't know, 7:30, maybe before that. I've lost track. I don't know. I can't imagine Wolf Blitzer getting on to CNN and saying, I have no idea how I'm here tonight. I didn't think I'd make it. I didn't think I would ever, ever get under the... You know, only me. Nor would Johnny Carson or Jimmy Fallon or Dick Cavett or anybody else. Well, Dick Cavett might have, actually. I think I'm more like Dick Cavett. And if you think I'm more like Dick Cavett than I am like Johnny Carson, please write to me at fcotolo@yahoo.com. I am the Bard of Broadcasting, and you know, I'm just... I make these stupid decisions. You know, they seem stupid, but they're not. They're really not stupid. But I'm married to that word, if nothing else in my life. And I decided tonight that I wonder what would happen if I, instead of Mr., people say Mr. Cotolo, Monsieur, listen to me, I'm pronouncing it phonetically. Monsieur, if I'm in France, Senor, I don't mind Senor, but imagine wherever I am, it's Mr. This, Mr. That. I want to be Commander Cotolo. Now, I don't want the responsibilities, and I don't want to earn that title. I want it as a kind of nickname, Commander Cotolo, because I am a commander. I command attention. I command... That's not demand now. Look up command, in a sense. My very presence does this. And that's why I'm able to do this show year after year after year after year. And then one year, you know, bang, it's all over. Well, you say, when? I don't know. That's up to fate and everything else that's out of my control, which is just about everything. I never came into this show and this... 2-hour contraption as a pioneer, there were no boundaries, there were no limits. I never came in with a plan or a set of sets or a set of anything. I just walked in and said, let's see what happens. So I'm commanding this time that I have, maybe this should be Commander Cotolo Chronicles. Let's let that sit for a while. I'm the Bard of Broadcasting because I am the Bard of Broadcasting. We know that. But this can't be Bard of Broadcasting Chronicles, you know. I don't want to be known as Bard Cotolo because that sounds like a name, like Bart. Bill goes, what's your name, Bart? Is that short for Bartholomew? No. But Commander is something like, Commander Cotolo, would you please come in? Hey, look who's here. It's Commander Cotolo. And you know, salute. You don't have to salute nothing. This is not that kind of a commander. This is a commander based on the word commander in the English language. It has nothing to do with politics or my allegiance or loyalty. I'm not Braveheart. I'm not Abraham Lincoln. I'm not Davy Crockett Commander. None of that. I'm not Navy Commander, Army Commander. I'm a commander of the airwaves, of the space that I have here. I want to be Commander Cotolo. So the Bard of Broadcasting, Commander Cotolo. So any, all you people who are working up those Wikipedia pages for me, Frank Cotolo, should go, man, it's Commander Cotolo. Too late now that the documentary has been released. I'm not going to be known as Commander Cotolo to anybody. We can start now. What's the hell's the difference when we start? Let me tell you what else we're going to start. Hey, I heard some good news earlier today. I've been talking about some people coming back on the show. I haven't been on in a while. Hey, let me tell you, we got it. We did it. We did it. March 27th, my friend and, might I say, former pioneer of podcasting and internet broadcasting, Kurt Brandow. He wants me to say Brando. And I'm going to say Brando from now on, even though there's an A in there. Brando. The A is silent. You know, silent letters make me nuts. I told you my mother used to pronounce all the silent letters. That's why when I said Kurt, and when I met him, it's Kurt Brandow. He said, what do you mean now? He said, it's Brando. But there's an A. I pronounce every letter. If a letter is silent, it shouldn't be there. This is the rule I want. Me, Commander Cotolo, wants that rule. We're getting Kurt Brandow on, and we're going to talk about that Bitcoin thing, bit money, that bit stuff. Because if anybody knows about this stuff, it's Kurt Brandow. He's the guy who brought Twitter to the attention of anybody who listens to this show well before there were people on their phones every 2 seconds tweeting. Okay? And all that. Tons of things that happened have happened with Kurt Brandow. And he'll be here live from, not Dubai, from the Arab Emirates. The Arab Emirates? Is that the name of it? The International Arab Emirates. The over there, you know, over in the Middle East. He will be here. And we know that. We've socked that one in, the 27th. That'll be a week after next week, which is the 20th of March, and Tom Savino will be back here. We'll be doing something about spring. He's into all this stuff. You know, Tom Savino is a certified, let me try to finish that. I got to get over the word certified. He's a certified yoga teacher, as well as he's been a certified teacher of the English language. He knows a lot about the Eastern ways, looking for a word, and that's the one I come up to say. So we do something about the solstice and spring and stuff, because this has been a long, hard winter. If you're anywhere on this part, this is what? The Western Hemisphere? No, this is the Eastern Hemisphere. No. Yeah. No. Wait. Down under is the Western Hemisphere, is it? Forget it. Who cares? I mean, really, who cares? Do you go to sleep at night and wonder? Do you say, I can't get to sleep tonight because I don't know where the Western Hemisphere and the Eastern Hemisphere ends and the Western Hemisphere begins. What about that international time zone, eh? Tom Savino will be here the 20th. Through the month of April, although I look at 3, 10, 17, and 24, we see that there are empty, we see. You don't see anything. I got it right here, a piece of paper. But we're going to have Dr. Waldar's going to be in there somewhere. And we're going to have some other people come in and I'll be doing, and listen to this. This just came about like literally moments ago. I'm going to do a Cambodian Cocktail Chronicles. This was created by SRN's own Phil Hong and I. Cambodian Cocktails Chronicles Hour. Or two. And we'll call it a cocktail hour, but it's going to be 2 hours. Where I sit in front of my piano with my microphone, and we have a lot of fun singing songs that we just make up. We're going to have people just email us titles, and we're going to just make up songs, and we're going to have a lot of fun. I think we'll have a lot of fun. Over there, as I'm pointing, and you can't see it, at the piano. And we're going to have, and now why is it called Cambodian Cocktail Hour? Cambodian cocktail? Why? Because I said, I told Phil, I said, you know, I'll do a show where I sit down, you know, on the ivories and sing some songs that are whatever the songs may be and just have some fun. But I want to wait till I get the piano tuned. And he said, no, don't. He said, why don't you do it like in Cambodia? Because all their songs are out of tune. All their, everything they do is out of tune. It doesn't sound to the Western ear. Or is it the Eastern ear? No, it's the Western ear. It doesn't sound the same. I said, okay, we won't get it tuned. Even that G note that sticks will stay there. It'll just be fun. Why do I have to? I'm not going to go about. I'm eventually going to get it tuned. Not that you care. But I'll do it. But I mean, we're going to do that sometime in April. Dr. Waldar sometime in April. We'll hope that Sky gets on there too. We'll have a Big Bang Theory show and a Cambodian cocktail hour, which will be 2 hours of me by the keys. This will be funny. Maybe we'll have some people here and we'll all just have a blast of a fun meal. Maybe I'll move the piano actually over. I could do it. It's on wheels. Okay. All right. Relax. Those things are coming up. But this, of course, is the evening when, let's get all these prepositions out of the way. Heather Drain is coming. I know she's getting ready. She's on somewhere on my Skype. Somewhere on my Skype play. She's just waiting for me to give her a call. And she's got, we're going to start talking. We'll see where it goes. Because Heather is such a queen of, she's the queen of, what did I say? Underground pop culture. Yeah, I say underground pop culture. And we just got into this little discussion about the new Godzilla a couple of weeks ago. But that's nothing. And we're going to go into this at all the different levels. Because, you know, we don't just sit here around and talk about the film. We talk about the film, the characters, what it means, what's going on with it, who made it. And then, of course, all the hundreds of thousands of Commander Cotolo is going to be getting into the entire legend of Mr. Godzilla. And the rest will be filled in by the beautiful and well-spoken one and only, you got it, Heather Drain. What a show you're going to have here. I'm going to do something else here first. Let's do this because we're still, yes, it's true. We're still selling books. What do you think? He said, I just can't seem to find what I was going to find. We're still HIJKL. Okay, there it is. L. There you go. We're still selling books. And we're going to continue to sell books.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
By Commander Cotolo. Commander Cotolo.
Juice Talk Radio. JuiceTalk.com.
Tell him.
Here, Frank Cotolo's Cotolo Chronicles.
Imagine if there were
companies that made cookies, and they only got together to make like what a certain amount of cookies for a certain amount of time. Okay.
Transistor by Velvet Steel.
You know, you've got short nipples, you've got long nipples that stick up from the body, you've got big areolas, you've got small areolas, you've got different colors, you've got hair growing off them, you've got everything growing, you've got veiny nipples, you've got all kinds of different things. But for some people, they have really small nipples.
And the Fabulous D Show by me, the Artist D.
You bring this out in me.
I know. And that's why this is so unique, because you could do a million of your own shows.
And I would never do this there, no.
Exactly. You'd never start saying, who did they suck off to get that?
All at Juiced Talk, archived for your listening pleasure. JuicedTalk.com.
.com.
Finally, a book that reveals everything that runs through a man's blood. I'm talking, of course, about Molotov Memoirs. It's the book that's sweeping the United States and going over the ocean and sweeping Europe and everywhere else that's over there. I'm Frank Cotolo, and my book, Molotov Memoirs, is now available at blurb.com. Go to blurb.com and buy this fabulous book. It's the closest thing to an autobiography I could write without telling the truth. Includes great illustrations by T. Stephen Gessig. It's a book you have to hold in your hands and bring with you everywhere you go, because it's Molotov Memoirs, the way I remember it, the way you want to know about it.
You know, I told everyone, and it's true, if you buy the hard copy, you can get it digitally for only $3.99, at least $3.99, and then put it on your Kindle or your Windle or your Nook or your Schnook or whatever you read. You could even read it on your, I think you could even read it on your computer somehow. You could figure it out, because it's cheaper that way. But if you get the big one and you spend the big buck for it, and I don't know how much, at blurb.com and find out. And then you somehow get it to me. You could write to me at fcatolo@yahoo.com. I'll take care of it. I'll reimburse you for sending it here, and I will sign it and personalize it for you. And then I will pay for the postage to send it back. And you know what you'll get for that? Huh? You'll get something to keep forever. And if, like I said, the show ends in a couple of months or something, because I meet some horrible tragedy which takes away my ability to command these 2 hours, then of course you will have a wonderful thing. And then you keep it, because you give it to your sons and your daughters and your cousins or whoever else, your benefactors, your people in your will. What benefactors? Not benefactors. Don't give it to your benefactors. It's going to be worth a lot of money someday. I guarantee you. I guarantee. And if it isn't, then, you know, what the heck? You bought a good book and you got something you'll never be able to get again. And that is written some stuff from me. Because, you know, it's over. I can't write anymore. When it's over, it's over. And Juice Talk Radio, please, come on, you know, these shows are archived over there. The Artist D, of course, waiting to start a new season, but the last season's there. And, you can get those there and on get all the times the Artist D is on here. You could go re-listen to the Bone Garden shows about, people who, well, you know that shows and any other various things. Of course, Velvet Steel is over there, and you could bring over your areolas and you can listen to over there. Your Victrolas, your areolas, and your gondolas. I don't know. These are my favorite three words. That's what happens. You're young and you're full of vinegar. You know, that's what they used to say. Yeah, young and you're, oh, look at him. He's full of piss and vinegar. Piss and vinegar, they used to say. And sometimes I watch it and I say, wait a second. There are times when I still have piss and, I'm filled with piss and vinegar. It might not be when I'm on the show. It might not be any given time. It might not be as much or as many times per day as it was in my life. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, go get that. Get License to Skill is only in digital, $2.99. For God's sakes, cigarettes are $10 a pack at some places, okay? So read something funny and have it in your own, for your own. It also helps support this show. Because aside from SRN, MediaWorks and all the fine people who continue to write, to play this show and air it, like True Talk Radio twice a day. We don't have to listen to it twice a day, but you can get time to write. And KJAG and the Jig Jog and Dave's Radio and Infinity Radio and Infinite Signs of Disaster Radio and the Light in Alabama and the place in Kansas, all these places that, and anyone else I don't even know. Rerunning the show. Thousands upon millions upon, and over again. Word of mouth, word of zeros and ones, it's all over the place. You help us support it by buying my books. So do that. It's going to be worth something. They are. Because remember, I've already have a book that was out of print and was going for as much as $200 on eBay or Amazon. Or one of those places where people sell their old books. That's the truth. And it's sold. So you imagine what these are going to go for. Because I'm still alive. So if they're out of print, you know. Today, that's a tough thing to talk about, though, because e-books are never out of print. Well, I mean, even e-books, even hard copy books, because they just make them as you go along. Oh, well, heck with that. We'll talk about that, too. Maybe we'll talk about the end of publishing with Kurt Brando and any other number of stuff. Right now, though. It's getting close to, what else do I have to say? Do I have anything else to say? I think that's pretty much it in terms of what else we have here. So let's call the one, the only, the lovely, the Did you hear that? Yeah, like that just that silence of just that void. And what's worse, it was an empty void where we all just, and I don't want to call it dead air because that was actually a show. And then the people who stole the show from, okay, forget, it's a long story. And we don't have to go into it now. What we do have to do now is call right now. Hear it? We're calling Heather Drain. On the drainophone. I know Heather Drain is there because hey, Commander Cotolo here.
It's Commander Drain. How you doing?
Commander is a female? Can a female be a commander? Or is she commandus? I don't know.
You know, I think as long as I get the respect and title, I'm good either way. I'm not too picky.
Well, if you want, well, you come to the right place for titles and respects.
That's the word on the street. How you doing?
I'm you know, moment by moment, dear.
That's the best we can do in this life, really.
Enough about me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
You are really writing up a storm, aren't you?
I'm a firm believer that, you know, sleep is for the weak.
You understand, right? Wake up. It's night. You never know if there's going to be another dawn. Wake up. Get it done, right? Get it. Do it.
Absolutely.
Do it.
Life is short, baby. And you got to just, I'm a firm believer, if there's something that you believe in and you love and you're passionate about, then you owe it to yourself and to the world around you to do it and enjoy it and revel in it.
So much for the positive part of our show. Thank you very much.
There we go. That was your moment of zen, everybody.
It was your moment of zen. Yeah, you know, now that's, see that? Now we, Zen includes many negative things. It's not just positive. That couldn't be a moment of Zen.
Well, I think that was positive.
It was positive, but you know, this isn't that, kind of a show. I mean, we're not here to pump it. In fact, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go there. You're right. If you're doing, the point is, get it done. Whether you succeed or fail, do it. That's the point, right?
Absolutely.
See, too many people say to themselves, if I believe it and I do it and I'll get it done and I'll be the best. And everyone can't be the best. I mean, because the best is only compared. That's Zen. You can only compare the best with those who are not as good. Right? So you can't all be the best. So you grow up and they go, you just be the best. Yeah, but the kids in the other class are supposed to be the best. How can everyone be the best? What have you been doing lately, Heather? How you doing? You were away. You were away for, I want to go into that. You've been away for a while. You went to write somewhere and do stuff?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's been a tremendous, beginning, or start to this new year. I went out west. A few weeks ago, I went out to California.
Wow.
And I got to visit with some friends, and I'm the main point of the trip was I got to, I'm working actually on a book with, a gentleman named Eric Edwards. And,
Wait, I know that. Why do I know that name?
Well, Eric is, he's basically sort of a film groundbreaker. He was at the very beginning of when adult films went from being kind of like stag loops, basically, to like actual.
Wait a second. I know. I not only do I know this guy, but he used to shop at. I know this guy from shopping when I lived in L.A. Eric Edwards was in pornography. Those early features, right?
Oh well, he's
is that him?
That. No, he.
Yes,
he
I am.
Went,
it is him.
It's was I in am. For four de- almost four decades.
Yeah, but back we're talking back of, back in the '70s.
Yeah.
He was a guy. He was in it, right? He was one of the guys who showed up.
Absolutely.
In
the, yeah.
Okay, I know that name. Okay.
Yeah.
You're doing with him?
I am indeed. Yeah. And, Eric's an amazing, tremendous man, and he's had an incredible life. He still has an incredible life. He's actually an incredibly talented artist, mm-hmm. writer, director, editor, and just, he's a family man. He's just, I think any stereotype that people have about men in the adult industry will be completely squashed and demolished, with the book that we're working on. I'm very lucky. He's a wonderful writing partner.
And talk about living through it. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
He was there from the start.
He's a survivor. And,
well, that's it. I didn't know it was him. That's, I mean, I know him and I you ask him when you see him or talk to him, if he shopped at, Ralph's or Mayfair, like in like 78, 79 in Hollywood.
Okay, Ralph's or Mayfair's.
Yeah, Ralph and Mayfair. And then one day, you know, we'll have him on, too. We'll talk about all the stuff we know.
Oh, that would be great. He's a tremendous interview, Seth.
He probably knows. Cool. You know, I told you Annie Sprinkles was on the show, and she was one of the first girl porn. She's from that whole era. She's a survivor, too. She's still around. You know Annie, right?
I don't
You've heard her
personally. She's on my Facebook.
But, you've heard, yeah, okay. You've
but
heard
I'm definitely familiar with her work. No, she's great. I mean, great sort of eco. She does the whole eco section.
I know she's into that weird stuff now with the statues with six arms, you know, anyway. But okay, well, that's good. So that's what you're doing. That's going to be count on me to help you promote that till Kingdom Come as it goes along.
Oh, well, thank you. And I'll definitely keep you in the loop. And of course, in addition to that, I'm, still writing for Dangerous Minds,
right,
as well as, my site, Mondo Heather.
Yes, Mondo Heather.
That's right.
you need some kind of a theme song so that when that site comes to the, when it comes up, that's not the word. What's the word? I've lost the word already. When you go to that site and it comes up, that's not the word. Launches? When the site
launches.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You need a mundo. I'll write you one.
I'm all about having theme songs. And, you know, one of the things that inspired the name of that blog was when
Mondo
I was
Connie.
In high school. Well, Mondo Pazzo, actually, which was the sequel to Mondo Connie.
Oh, wow. And did you know the sequel to Mondo Connie?
I own the sequel to Mondo Connie, yes.
Wow.
And, there was a great trailer. I remember seeing for it when I was in high school on Real World Cinema, and it had this great, very jazzy Italian music, and it had a very dramatic announcer, and he's like, Mondo Pazzo, Mondo Pazzo, and that always stuck with me, and I thought, Mondo, that's a fabulous word, and that word just to me seemed to connotate all kinds of groovy, weird, cool, at times dark, but light things too, and,
the strangest thing about Mondo Connie is the original, movie, Mondo, you still there?
I am.
Oh, okay. Your face just moved on Skype for some reason.
Uh-oh.
The thing about
you can see me?
No, I can see. I see your burnout. That beautiful burnout shot you have of yourself there. You know that.
Oh,
one?
Yes.
The Mondo Connie that people didn't know, or maybe still don't know, and people aren't aware of that movie as much as they're aware of the theme song, which I think won an Academy Award.
Yes, that song was entitled More.
That's right. More Than the Greatest Love. I'm going to play that when I do my Cambodian Cocktail Hour here on Cthulhu Chronicles in April.
Oh, that's fabulous.
More.
I need a Cambodian cocktail right now. I love it.
More was once the most popular wedding song in history.
I have heard this. And that if people, I think, knew the origin of that song.
Right? Yeah.
But it's funny with weddings because people, I think, do that. It's like the whole, like, Luke and Laura, not to derail thing, but people thought that was really romantic. And it's like, well, he raped her. Like, that's a weird beginning of a relationship. I wouldn't recommend it. But
now, speaking of themes and stuff, this is great. This is going to lead us right into what we're going to talk about. Listen to this. You'll be able to hear it. Listen. Listen. Yep. This is the original. There you go. Right? It took him a while to get into the melody, but those. Now you know what we're playing.
Oh, absolutely! That is the theme song for the original Godzilla, aka Gojira. And that's actually one of my favorite pieces of film music ever. It's so epic.
This now originally called Godzilla, King of the Monsters in the United States.
Well, yeah, the United States version is slightly different than the original Japanese. They just added a...
There's the theme. There's the one everyone would know. Dun, 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 dun. There is. I like this. I just remember hearing this day in and day out when this came on television.
Right.
I couldn't have seen it in the movies. I was too young. I was even too young. I was too young. But, okay, so there's Godzilla, King of the Monsters, which was the American version. And that's what we're going to... And you were right. You said that. You said the... I thought I was... See, I knew it. I know I didn't think so. I was telling someone yesterday about the show, and I said, I know Heather is going to say Gojira before I do, and no. You're going to know. That's the original. G-O-J-I-R-A.
Indeed.
That is...
J-I-R-A. Yeah.
And so people think that you're making fun of the Japanese language when you say it like that, because we say Godzilla, and we said those hard, you know, the hard Z's and Godzilla, the hard L's.
Right.
And they don't. Godzilla. So it's Gojira, because they don't have the L. But we're not making fun. That's the name of the movie, correct? Tell us from the very beginning what you know. And I'll add what I know, which is not as much as what you know, but.
The United States version had this additional footage with Raymond Burr. I guess out of just sort of like, you know, we have to have an American in this film and make the American audience feel more comforted. Probably also just slightly offset. I mean, the original Godzilla, it's easy for people to forget because the series, you know, as sometimes horror or sci-fi franchises go, like later on with Nightmare on Elm Street and such, is like it progressively got kind of more campy intentionally at times and silly. But the original Godzilla was very dark. It's very disturbing, especially when you realize the context of, you know, this was made in a country that, you know,
was
less
devastated.
Than 10 years before had, you know, survived atomic, you know, the atomic bomb. So, the whole pregnant fear of like what nuclear radiation did, what it was going to continue to do, is very much permeated in that film, and it's still effective. It's still an amazing piece of cinema.
It was in a very you're right. Yes, it wasn't just dark in a sense, but it was. I don't know much about the photography of it, but it was. Almost a cloudy black and white. It wasn't in color. I don't know the first Godzilla color movie in the series.
I think the first color Godzilla film was King Kong versus Godzilla.
Oh, that's right. We bring talk about King Kong. Godzilla. Yes, it was King Kong versus Godzilla. King Kong was the good guy in that. That I saw in the movies. But that was the first color, you think?
That was the first color.
It was.
That was the third one. And the second Godzilla film was Godzilla Raids Again, a.k.a. Gigantus the Fire Monster. And... that one was black and white, but that was 55. That was made, you know, the year after the original Godzilla.
Now, the guy, it's Ishiro Honda? Is that his name?
Ishiro Honda.
Honda,
yes.
I don't know much about him. I don't know if you do either, but he did have in mind the concept that this radioactive breathed, because he was radioactive breath, fire breathing radioactive breath, came about. Because of nuclear testing, they didn't say nuclear bomb. They didn't blame the United States for Godzilla.
Yeah, they could have.
They were more than insinuating. And of course, in the original movie, and I'm sure Honda was too busy thinking about making cars that he didn't expect this to become a. But I don't think he expected this to be his life's work and a creature that would, you know, I have a little Godzilla doll in my bedroom. I mean, I didn't think about it. So what I'm saying is, I think he was trying to make a statement when he put this whole thing together, don't you?
I think undoubtedly. And that's the thing is, because I think people that aren't as into these films kind of just assume, a lot that's not necessarily true. I mean, some of the later films definitely got pretty silly, and I love those too. I love it all.
Well, we'll go into that, but let's start with this, the one that really started it all, because this was like one of the first, this had to be one of the first Japanese imports to America. I mean, commercially successful, correct?
Right. Yeah, I would say I don't know if it was the first one, but it was definitely an early one. And, it wasn't unusual entirely for films to get imported over here and have things added
right.
to them. That became pretty big in the '50s, especially, but Godzilla, I think, definitely stood out because it's one of the best. It's an incredibly well-made film. It's effective even to this day. It must have, I can only imagine how scary and intense it must have been seen at a theater in 1954. Because even in America, I mean, it's a little different for us because we didn't obviously quite experience the direct hit of the A-bomb like the Japanese did. But I mean, obviously the fear of the bomb permeated America.
Sure.
So, you know, must have been pretty intense to see that, you know, when it came out.
Well, it was. And let me tell you, as a witness, as a witness of that era, that obviously the bomb scare, the whole nuclear war scare was tremendous. And it was, when I saw, this was a very frightening movie, even on a television set for a kid to see. Not just because there had been other dinosaur movies and creatures and everything, of course, but when we were watching it as Americans, little kids on television, we were watching this dark, this black and white, cloudy movie. But it was, I mean, we didn't really have a sense of Japan, you know. I mean, we were kids, you know. We didn't have, this was so far away; it could have been another planet, and yet it was so scary because you would sit there and you would think, like, oh, you know, where next? If they don't, you know, if he could walk through Tokyo, he'll be on Flatbush Avenue in no time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was rather frightening. But we didn't have that. I don't know if we didn't have the nuclear. Kids didn't. We would hear about these things, but obviously there were a lot of movies, even American movies, at that time, using the metaphor. But for Japan to use it, right? Because they're the only country ever hit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because because the other places that got hit as far as testing goes, yeah, didn't really have the film industry. So, yeah. No, I mean,
the Godzilla began as a metaphor. I don't know how he's going to wind up because we'll talk about that later. But it was a metaphor for what the forces of man could do, that we could, you know, blow ourselves up. We could, and it's not over when the smoke clears. I mean, that's like the thing too. That's what they were saying, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I do think that, there were films in the '50s that, I think definitely were kind of an outlet for that fear, you know, on the American side. But Godzilla, I think, is definitely out of all the entire international and even domestic films, just, I mean, it's one of the best. It's so standout. And, you know, I think people that have stereotypes of sci-fi movies or monster movies in general, like, if they saw, you know, the original Godzilla, they'd realize that, you know, not all the stereotypes are true.
Mondo Heather's with us here with me, Commander Cotolo. Commander Cotolo chronicling here, talking about Godzilla. I wonder, I didn't look this up, and I don't know if it is anywhere available as a piece of information, but who translated Gojira into Godzilla? I mean, was that just the American movie how did they do that? Who did that?
I don't know. My film knowledge doesn't always go to the translation side of things, to be honest. So.
Yeah, I mean, how do you translate a proper name? Like Godzilla was Gojira. Someone in the in promo department, somebody connected to adding Raymond Burr. And I hear he did that in one day in a room somewhere.
I would believe that.
Yeah.
What's interesting is when they did Godzilla 1985, which was kind of Godzilla's big comeback in the 80s, they brought Raymond Burr on in that film officially, which I thought was kind of, the film itself is so-so, to be honest, but the bringing Burr in was a cheeky move.
I heard about that, and I only heard about that when seeing some of this stuff. I didn't even know that, and I don't remember. So he comes back as, he's not supposed to be the same character, is he?
I believe he is supposed to be the same character.
Wow.
But yeah. It's been a little while, but from my memory, yeah, I think he's the same dude.
That was Godzilla 1985. The Legend is Reborn. I don't know. I don't know that why. Well, he wasn't doing much at that time, Raymond, I guess. Or was that when he was doing Ironsides? Is that Ironsides? I don't know.
Or maybe, yeah, well, he was doing some stuff. I don't know. That probably was, you know, I think he'd pretty much been relegated to TV, so I'm sure it was nice. And plus, it's Godzilla. And, you know, Godzilla's adorable. Who'd want to work with Godzilla?
Well, I think he felt a connection. He felt a bond with the, because by that time, 30 some odd years later, it was a legend, and it was a film legend, I guess, and it was a paycheck, so.
We all got bills to pay.
So we went, well, that would be interesting to find the fellow who made it get from Gojira into Godzilla. That's, I don't know, I mean, it's a great name, and then it became Godzilla. I mean, Honda adapted that. Do you know how, is he dead?
Ishiro Honda, I believe he is no longer with us.
Do you know if he was the, I mean, we know he created it, he directed the first one, I think he wrote it too. Did he have to do with all the market? I mean, he did the first couple ones and then that was his property and he just collected checks from that? Do you know about, we don't know much about him, do we?
No, I mean, he made other films. In fact, he made a really, really good cult. It's more of a cult film, but he did a film called Matango, in the mid-60s. That's a good kind of weird, cult sci-fi film. I'd recommend it. But no, he did other stuff. I mean, the thing is, he was part of Toho Studios and
That's it. Toho, that was his.
A lot of, right. Yeah. He worked at Toho and Toho employed a lot of amazing directors. In fact, some people don't realize that one of the filmmakers that have worked for Toho was, Akira Kurosawa.
I knew you were going to bring that name. I didn't know that, but they were like the big MGM of their place there.
Huh? Oh, Toho's amazing. And Toho's still around too. They, definitely a company with some amazing history and, you know, like any good film studio. I mean, you get the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, with the library, but the stuff that's good is, sterling. It's really, really good.
So I was just wondering if he, you know, if that was his, and then later on, before he died, there were still toys and stuff. I mean, if he was getting pieces of that Godzilla marketing machine, has been incredible. And all the reboots and everything that's gone on, and here we go again, you know?
Right. Well, people love, I mean, that's the amazing thing to me about Godzilla, as far as being a newer, in the grand scheme of things, kind of a younger monster, say, compared to like Dracula or, you know, the Wolfman, is the staying power. People, you know, we have a whole new generation of people that are excited about Godzilla. And, you know, I think that's amazing. The monster still has like such power. And, it's great. You know, I love it. I'm excited. I hope this American, version that comes out is going to be really good. The trailer looks amazing.
Doesn't it?
And it's got to be a hell of a lot better than the last American version of it. So.
Right, and that was also CGI. Yeah, that was also CGI, the Roland Emmerich thing. But this brings us to the most important thing, and that is when I heard about the latest reboot, and they weren't showing anything. They weren't showing the face or any part of Godzilla. But when I finally saw a piece of it and I went, wow, they're going back. They're going to do Godzilla. It's not going to be the one that Roland Emmerich recreated and CGI did with that one. This is, I mean, they just took the name and everything and just did their own story and did their own deal. And it was another very typical Roland Emmerich movie in terms of characters and plot and everything. But this has the Honda's monster. That's him.
It has the true Godzilla. Most, and this is going to make me sound like a total geek. And I own that. I will totally admit that. But, I mean, the Godzilla in the 90s, you know, the 90s American version, I mean, that didn't look like Godzilla. It basically was like Jurassic Park.
Yes.
But not quite. The CGI wasn't quite as well executed as it was in Jurassic Park.
But this brings us to the most important thing, and that is that the original, now we look, just, let's look at effects here for a second, because everyone bought the original Godzilla who walked among this great, those were, what do they call them? How can I miss this? where airplanes, hangars, those were airplane hangars where Tojo Studios did that. And there were models and create, they did, right? They built miniature models and everything for this guy in a suit right? It was a guy in a suit from the very beginning, correct?
Yeah. I mean, that's how, you know, monster effects were pretty much done back in the day. It was, you know, the guy in the suit or a mask or.
Well, there must have been a number of guys though, because no one ever got credit for being that guy in the first one. Right? Who was that?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I was always too busy just admiring the monster. I think I kind of miss that era because as much as people might kind of like snicker, whatever. I mean, some of those suits were really effective. I mean, in the first one, especially,
yeah.
If you know how to use shadow and lighting and you have a good designer on hand, you could make that shine. You could totally rock the man in the suit. Yeah.
And now as it became more and more cartoon like, in the series, the guy, he was a lot more limber. Did you notice that? How they didn't, and was in color and he just jumped around. If you look at King Kong versus Godzilla, they're practically like boxing. They're like man suits boxing.
Well, you have my favorite moment would be an invasion of, Astro Monster, which has, Godzilla dancing. He does a little victory dance for like a few seconds and it's the most adorable. And I'm going to warn everybody overhead. I find kaiju monsters in general to be really cute. This is where I get girly, is watching these movies, because I love monsters. I'm a monster kid.
This is where she gets girly. But listen, yeah. I wrote down a couple of these names that through the year. Now, we said King Kong, but as he went on, Godzilla, he met, you probably know him all. I got a list here. You want to just tell me? And I'll write off the list. You know him better. You probably know him by heart, right?
Well, wait, are we talking the film titles or are we talking monsters?
We're talking the monsters that he fought
well,
in these movies.
For me, the absolute number two, I mean, Godzilla's the king, mm-hmm. so he's the first. Number two's got to be Mothra, a.k.a. she was also called Mothra.
Of course, he met Mothra. I'm about ones now, and I'm talking about other monster movies. I'm talking about ones that actually had Godzilla, because there is a Godzilla versus Mothra.
Yeah, no, and Mothra has appeared in several of the Godzilla films.
Okay, so Mothra,
yeah.
We had King Kong, Mothra, who
Rodan.
Else did he meet? Who?
Rodan.
Painter. Was Rodan, that's right. Thank you.
I would pay to see that shit.
I wrote that joke for her, and she. Was he ever in a fight with?
Yeah.
Oh wow, well, Rodan was.
Yeah. Because there was in fact, in Godzilla versus Final Wars, there's this whole thing where Godzilla's knows something up, because usually in the film, the two kind of allies with Godzilla are Rodan and Mothra, and they try to fight him, and that's when you know, like, okay, you know, something's up. But no, I mean, as far as fighting Godzilla, of course, there's King Ghidorah. King Ghidorah is usually the big,
Ghidorah,
the big
that's H-E-D, that's the Hedorah? Is that how you say that? Hedorah?
No, you're thinking Hedorah.
Hedorah.
Yeah. Which that's the Smog monster. That's later on.
Oh, that's the same monster? Because there's two movies.
They're the same movies.
The Smog monster.
Godzilla versus Hedorah was the original title when it got distributed over here to the U.S. It retitled as Godzilla versus the Smog Monster.
Now Godzilla had to, if he's the nuclear, he was created by, Smog creates a monster.
That's an interesting film. It gets kind of bagged on, but I think it's interesting. It has a very pro-environmental message, and it has a psychedelic kind of feel to it. It's really, I think it's one of the most unique Godzilla films, in my opinion. It's silly at times, but and you actually have Godzilla flying in the air, which you don't see too often at all. But
he could jump so.
But it's interesting. I like it.
He could jump so high; it almost seems like he's flying.
Right.
Megalon. Remember who's Megalon?
Megalon.
I don't know him. I don't know him, but I've heard.
I'm trying to remember Megalon. Oh wait, Megalon is. Basically, he's a big beetle.
Okay.
Now, see, you're getting more into the 70s. That's definitely as the series started getting progressively a little more on the silly side.
Right. I'm just mentioning all these ones that were also involved with him. There's one just called the Sea Monster. Does he have a name, a special name? I got Mosura.
The Sea Monster, I believe, is the Crab Adibra.
Oh,
like a giant crab.
A giant crab.
It's a giant crab. That's, I don't know what else. Yeah, Ibra.
Destroyer.
Ibra.
Destroyer.
Destroyer. Now that one, that's part of the high sci series.
Okay.
Or no?
The what? Isn't that
Destroyer?
Destroyer. D-E-S-T-O.
No, that's part of the later, that's more like 80s, 90s Godzilla. That one is one of the best of the latter day Godzilla films.
Oh,
that one actually, okay. I had a friend who, he's sadly no longer with us, but, he and I had a discussion about that because he was a big fan, and it actually made him weepy, and he was a very masculine, macho dude.
Wow.
But Destroyer is really emotionally, that's the thing people don't realize these films can have, the, you know, when they're good, can have that kind of gravitas and power, and that one's definitely one of them. It's excellent.
Remember, whatever happened, that Godzilla found his audience through all these, whether they were, you know, I mean, they kept making them, and as badly as we can say they were because of, you know, they're kind of campy and cartoony, but they had a definite audience in them because they kept making these things. They must have been making money on them, and they kept building new sets for him to step on. Right.
That had to cost some money. To be honest, I think if people, if they really honestly examined all of them, I mean, most of them, I think most of the effects and most of them are really good. I think things got kind of shoddy in the 70s, you know, like, as it got sillier. But, when they did the reboots, especially in the 80s and rebooted the series, you know, some of those got really, really good looking. They kept up with the times, but, still kind of kept the monster, you know, a lot of it kept the classic kind of feel too of Godzilla. I mean, by the 70s, he started looking like a kitty cat.
Yeah.
Kind of. He had
cat
ears almost.
It was a whole different suit. It was a whole different suit. He was more limber. He moved around. He could actually move his fingers, and it was really cartoony. But here's something someone told me, and there's always history involved in this, in these things that's more than film history. But a friend of mine he was just a historian, and I wasn't really into history that much, but you just watch as you do with all movies and you accept what you see, right? There's what is that called? The suspension of belief or whatever, right?
Suspension of disbelief?
Yeah, suspension of disbelief. Anyway, you watch it and you just accept what's going on. And a friend of mine who was an older person, I think it was my friend's uncle, said Godzilla, he said, you know, you watch a Godzilla, when you watch this Godzilla movie, he said, you realize how much of it is fake. And I said, well, of course, I know, there's no such, it didn't really happen. He goes, no. He said, the Japanese didn't have an army. The Japanese at that time didn't have tanks. They weren't allowed to. The Japanese military was still run by the United States. They didn't have all those tanks and guns and things. And yet they showed the Japanese army and navy going after Godzilla. They just made it up.
You know, I find it fascinating when people harp on really odd elements. And it reminds me of hearing a discussion between two, horror fans about zombies and how, like, well, oh, this type of zombie, that's stupid because that wouldn't really happen. And it's like, dudes, they don't exist, either version of them. Calm down. You know, just enjoy it, you know?
A good movie,
you know?
But there must have been a discussion when they were putting this thing together, and Honda was sitting there going, well, what, you know, we got this idea, and maybe the Toho people said, what are we going to fight it with? I mean, how are we going to fight this thing? What are you going to do? And he says, well, you know, who's going to care? Who knows? What the hell? We'll just get tanks, and we'll get baby tanks and things and stuff, and we'll just shoot at it and stuff. And now the people in Japan, I wonder if they were going, we got an army? I wonder if they're sitting around watching this. That's wild.
They had an army. I'll be, you know, I will totally admit to being ignorant on that aspect.
Yeah, isn't that something?
No. I have no idea.
I know I could bring something to the table talking about Godzilla with you. Heather Drain is with us here as we go into the first hour. We're not going to break for any stupid little sayings or things or sales. We're just going to keep talking because there's so much to talk about. And especially with taking this, translating Godzilla and what it meant to them and what it meant to us. Obviously, it made a lot more money over there because they kept making these things. Or was it just so popular? Who was the market over here? You got to wonder, don't you? Who was the market? What did they market to, kids?
I think as the series progressed, it definitely, I mean, by the late 60s, 70s, it was more aimed at children.
Mm.
Absolutely. I think when they rebooted it in the 80s, that was a little less. And actually, there's a whole bunch of Godzilla films that were made in the 80s and 90s that weren't even, they were never theatrically shown in our country.
Okay, right.
So, and it's too bad because actually some of those are amazing and they're great. I mean, now I think it's a little easier to get a hold of, but you had to get bootlegs back.
Must
in
be
the day.
Dozens of these, some that we don't even know. There's all together. I wonder what the library total number.
The total number is around almost 30 at this point.
Wow.
About 28 movies.
In the beginning, you know, like someone, I knew another person too who made a living doing voices when they translated. They didn't translate. Well, I mean, whatever they did, however they did
it. The dubbing?
Yeah, the dubbing, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he told me, he said, you know, at one time when they started to do this, which really comes into, doesn't that really happen in the 50s where they start dubbing voices over as, because that's when more of the foreign films were coming in here.
Oh yeah, I mean, dubbing, dubbing was way more common for a long time than subtitles. Subtitles are a lot more common now. You know, it's like it switched places, which is, I think, for the best.
Well, he had told me, he said, you know, there's only a certain number of people who do this. And because it was really an acquired talent, they couldn't translate exactly because of the phrasing of the mouth. And if you watch these movies, you'll see that whatever's coming out in English it's not in sync, but at least it's the same time as the mouth is moving in Japanese. Right?
Right, yeah.
So they had to change some stuff but go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I'm just saying they had to change some words. Not that I don't know if those words mattered. Of course they mattered in other movies. If you did Fellini and did those other movies, you had to be very particular about what you used. But this guy said, you know, there were only a certain amount of people who did this. It's not like they could get anybody. And that's why a lot of those voices sound incredibly familiar throughout all those, that the same people are doing a lot of those voices.
Right. Well, and you know, honestly, though, I will say I do think actually the phrasing does matter in some of these films because, I mean, it's easy to assume, you know, I mean, yeah, it's not technically an art film, but with the Godzilla series, there's certain details that could be missed if something's like dubbed badly, you know, that are kind of important to like the scale of the series or plot points. And, cause there's a lot of, the cool thing about the Godzilla series as whole is there's always some kind of oddness to it. Like there's an unusual approach. Part of it's cultural and part of it's just the beauty of Godzilla and kaiju monsters in general. But so you know, I mean, I'm a purist. I'd rather much have things subtitled. Even if it's like, you know, something on par of like Manos, Hands of Fate, you know, I want to know what the dialogue is.
Yeah, I don't even know. How can we trust when they do subtitles, how can we trust that that's exactly what they're saying either? Because translations are done by, translations are always kind of sticky. But, you know, I didn't mean to say that they were, that was bad dubbing, that they were off time. I'm saying that they had to change some words if they were going to always fit English into the lip movement of the other language.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I didn't mean, like you said, not the dynamics of it. I mean, it's not like, you know, this guy's yelling, look, and, you know, in Japanese, and the English guy's going, look, look. No, I didn't mean that. I meant the expressions of the feel, but the words themselves had to be changed.
Oh yeah. Now I can only imagine just the sticky wicket of having to do dubbing for a lot of films back in the day. Cause yeah, you do have to have it kind of fit.
That's why they said there was a bunch of guys and gals who did it, and they were so good at doing it because you literally have to watch the movie and do it with the movie going. They do it. That's why they did do it.
Right.
And that's tough.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No. And it's funny because I think in some ways that tradition's carried on today, but I think you see it more now probably with like anime. Than you do with live action. But,
right.
But it's still, yeah, I think you still have kind of like this, this group of, voice actors who are really renowned and, you know, do conventions and stuff. So the tradition lives on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a strange thing Okay, so we don't know who the guys were. Probably hundreds of guys got into the Godzilla outfit and were in those movies. I mean, it might not have even been the same guy in each movie, right? They might have switched.
It could have been the same guy. It could have been, to be honest. I feel bad because I know there's probably going to be somebody listening to this that's a Godzilla expert. And I'll be the first to admit that I would never call myself personally an expert.
No, we're not.
Godzilla
no.
films, but I'm a fan, and I do. Sure. I love them, and I love monsters. And so I'm coming from a place of pure love here.
But these days, if anybody does know, go to Mondo, Heather, and you got a thing there. They can email you or join up there. Your email your blog, or you can email me at fcatolo@yahoo.com or over there at 148f Frank or whatever I am over at 148.ca. I don't know, whatever SRN something. And you and if you do know, if anybody does know, you know. And the funny thing is, we have in Yokohama. I have a Cthulhu Chronicles fan club. And, and I don't know, I've never even thought of trying. Someone used to write to me all the time, but I wonder, I don't even think they'd know that much about it from the beginning because they're all younger people.
You never know. I mean, some of the most intense and well-versed film fans of many different genres. Sometimes it's like the more old guard, but sometimes it's like the 25-year-old. You know, and you're thinking, oh, you're in your mid-20s and you're like an encyclopedia. Yeah. So it's kind of a cool thing. People will surprise you in a good way.
Good point. So because Godzilla was a hit, they made Rodan and then they made the individual. They introduced these monsters individually, just came up with another monster. Is that what they did?
Well, there were some monsters crossed over, some didn't. I mean, Toho also made, I believe, Varan. And there were other films too, War of the Gargantuans, which I believe Ishiro Honda also made. Okay. And, which has Russ Tamblyn and a song called The Words Get Stuck in My Throat.
Does Russ Tamblyn is in one of them? Wow.
Russ Tamblyn's amazing. Oh my God.
I know.
How many people, he was in West Side Story and Twin Peaks and Satan Sadist.
Tom Thumb was on last week.
Oh wow! See,
yeah, Tom. That's how I knew him before. Yeah, he was in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Incredible dancer, right?
Oh, amazing! I love everybody. Should love Russ Tamblyn. If you don't, what is wrong with you?
He was in the Gargantuan movie, the one
War of the Gargantuans.
Now,
Gargantuas.
Also, spent his last years in the business over there was Nick Adams.
Oh, the great Nick Adams. Yeah, he was in Invasion of the Astro Monster.
Hey, you know, look at this. She knows. With the Invasion of the which?
Invasion of the Astro Monster.
Astro?
Astro.
Astro. You're saying Astro. I'm sorry.
Which is a reference to... Oh, no. It's a reference to King Ghidorah, who we were just talking about.
Oh. Wow. That's... And then they actually ran... I don't know whether this is, I don't know who came up with any of this stuff, but they ran out or they just decided not to use, not to create other monsters, but they started to create fake Godzillas, right? There was a space Godzilla, right?
Well, that's not necessarily a fake Godzilla. Space Godzilla is basically, it's a little complicated, but basically parts of Godzilla went into space and merged basically kind of with space dust and,
Godzilla.
Space Godzilla is not the only truly fake Godzillas. Would be the Mecha, the robot Godzilla.
Yeah, Mecha
those
Godzilla.
Those are false Godzillas in a way.
Someone in that one, I never saw that all the way through. I must admit, somebody like a mad scientist or something created a robot Godzilla.
Well, no. Usually it's aliens.
Excuse me.
That's pesky aliens. I know. Get it right.
Excuse me. My kids had a Godzilla video game we used to play. You know, one guy plays Godzilla and the other guy plays whoever the monster might be. And it's fascinating to play that and look at the incredible visuals on a game when in fact all of that stuff was analog. And there were probably, I don't know how long they took and how many people it took for them to make those sets. Where they literally built all those little that built cities.
Yeah, no, I mean the detail, especially in some of the ones that kind of you could tell like they really were still still kind of had a sizable budget and everything and care to detail. I mean, some of the sets are terrific.
Yeah.
And just the creativity. I think part of the appeal for people that are fans of the series is just, I mean, at least to me, it's just the variety of monsters, but also the way that they're utilized. One film, and it's not one that's talked about quite as much, but it was made in the 80s, called Godzilla vs. Biollante. And that one...
Where is that? Is that an Italian monster?
No.
Biollante! Biollante! No. Go ahead.
That would be interesting, though.
Who is Biollante?
Biollante is kind of like a plant monster. That sounds... That's not a good way to put it. But basically, the source of it is the scientist, his daughter, that he loved, dies. And he kind of tries to transfer her and keeps her living through this monster who ends up fighting Godzilla. And it's a really, but the way it's done is really just creative and emotional. And, you know, I think that's another one. I'm always interested in films that aren't what you think they're going to be. And that's definitely a Godzilla film where you might be going into it being like, oh yeah, I'm going to watch a big dumb monster movie, whatever. It's going to be campy and cheesy. And instead you got something that's kind of smart. And melancholy in parts. You know, it's good. It's really interesting.
That's one of the things I love about you. And when it comes to these, looking at these things, these movies, which are so many people just dismiss or consider crap. And that is, you could see you, can understand, could see is not the word. You can find the fiber of them, the fiber that makes them actually dramas and makes them, work as stories, as opposed to just, you know, creepy, stupid, like you just did with the movie. I don't even know that one.
That one.
That one.
No, thank you so much. Like that's awesome. You've always been so good to me. And,
well, you do that with all these other movies. I mean, if I ain't gonna have anybody who I get, anybody can get on like I do. I know a little things here and there, but anybody can get on and just talk about these things and say, I like that, or I don't like that, or this, that, the other thing. But you know, you get into the heart. You know when a movie has a heart, and in this genre, not necessarily monster genre, but in the underground pop culture type. Underground stuff that you always talk about and that you're an expert talking about, you always find the heart of it, and that really lifts the pieces into a category that a lot of people don't ordinarily know that they'll see in those pictures, and it makes people go to see other things. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know how people just discount stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, part of the reason that I do what I do in general is out of love, but also a sense of, I never go for the stuff that's already super loved. That's why I don't really, cover mainstream stuff too much. It's like, it's already going to get covered. It's already loved. It's already written about, and I mean, Godzilla's kind of more on the bigger known end of things, but at the same time, as far as like mass critical reception, I mean, anything sci-fi and horror has always gotten the shaft. For the most part, I mean, the original Godzilla, I think at this point is critically respected, but the others are still pretty much, neglected. And, I think a fringe culture superhero. I'm trying to right the wrongs of the man.
You still can't do that unless you can actually identify, the heart and soul of a piece and to be able to see that these types of pieces, through the history of film have heart and soul. Is probably that's the nucleus of your talent right there.
Well, thank you. I'm all about heart.
Yeah. Now let's see what happens. What do you expect, or what do you think is going on? How much have you read about this new one? Where's it come from? Who directed it? What do you know about this? Because we're all excited about seeing this. Because this is going to be even better. Not just in story or what have you, than Roland Emmerich's. That's just going to negate that whatsoever. They're just going to have to find a new title for that and call it something else. But this is looking like, it looks to me like they're going to refer that the Godzilla that's coming back is the original. It could be like Godzilla 2. It's what it looks like to me when I saw some trailers. They're talking about the monster that they killed in the first one. Now this is what I'm asking you here, because we had to talk about suspension of belief. When they decided to make another Godzilla, but that original 1954. And you remember, and I remember, how that ended. We talked about this on the show a while back with the guy who created the this machine that took oxygen out of water, and then and he didn't want to give it to them to kill Godzilla because he didn't want it to get in the wrong hands, and he's the only one who knew the formula or whatever, so he commits suicide while he kills Godzilla. And in that original one, we see the bones of Godzilla. He's dead. It's gone. And yet, he comes back, and no, and they never mention anything, do they? He's just there again.
But that's not, I mean, but think about all the Dracula, I mean, because Leo, the last time I was on your show, we did Dracula.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's, that's, I don't think it's that unusual. If a character's popular enough, they'll come back.
Oh, I don't think it's unusual, but I was, you know, as a writer, I say to myself, I would be looking for, if I was going to write it, and they said, hey, you're going to write another Godzilla, so do it. And I'm going to, oh, geez, I got to find a reason. I have to refer to that original. I have to connect this story to the actual thread of the life of this ridiculous monster. What happened? We saw him diminished. We saw him, how does he come back? And they just go like, ah, he comes back. I don't know. Story-wise, it drives me nuts. And you know, the Dracula, you're right about the Dracula ones. This doesn't make that right. I mean, we do that all the time. He just comes back, but we don't even ask why.
Well, it depends on, with Godzilla, it depends on like what particular, with Godzilla, there's three eras of the series. And like, you have the first, like the classic, you know, series, which is called the Showa series. That's like the original up until about, you know, the late 70s. And then you have the Heisei series, which is the 80s. And then you have the Millennium, which is like the late 90s to early 2000s. And, you know, and depending on which series and which film, some of them are, you know, connected story-wise, and Godzilla lives through most of those. Some of them change. You could have like two films back to back and they're not at all connected. They might have the same characters, but the stories do not connect. So it depends. It really ranges on what
but
series.
He doesn't die in his movies as much as Dracula or the monster. Right?
No, he doesn't.
He goes back into the water, right? He goes back into the water and goes away to Godzilla land and comes back. There's even a Son of Godzilla movie.
Yeah, actually, Godzilla's had a couple of offspring. I'm glad you brought this up.
From who?
I have some theories on this.
Now, go!
The first Godzilla son, I'm going to put that word son in quotation marks.
Okay.
And you're about to hear why. It was one called Minya. And Minya's big vehicle, I think, was Godzilla's Revenge, which is one of the worst Godzilla films. Half of it's like footage from other movies and...
Mm-hmm.
And also Son of Godzilla. But Minya basically is kind of like if Mortimer Snurd had sex with a dinosaur and had a baby. I'm telling you, what happened is Godzilla had a one-night stand with some woman. She was pregnant with some dumbass's kid. But knew Godzilla would be a better dad. And I think she dumped the kid on him. That is my theory, because Minya is an annoying, ridiculous, brain-damaged character. I mean, Godzilla's this badass, you know, monster. He is the Thunder Lizard, and for him to have this little dumbass Mortimer Snurd mutation is bullshit. I'm calling major bullshit on Minya. So can we cuss on your show?
You can do it. You can say anything you want. Okay. But you know, I wonder how many people. I wonder how many people out there are going, I better write this Mortimer Snurd name down because I can look it up later. I wonder how many people are connected to that. But you know, go ahead. So that's what's the other theory?
Oh, that's the main theory with Minya. The rest of them are probably his kids. But
but how does he have a kid? Can he reproduce by himself? Is he asexual?
That's something that's never totally explored.
Yeah, you see?
There is one that actually we were watching earlier that was Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla from the Heisei series. And they find an egg. And half the film, you're like, what is this egg going to be? They don't know what's in the egg. And the egg hatches, and it's Godzilla's kid. But the question is, who laid the egg? Was it Godzilla? We don't know. Maybe it was maybe he's on Monster Island knocking boots with some other lizard. And, but the mother's irresponsible. Maybe she's got a drinking problem. We don't know.
they never fully explained Son of Kong. Never explained that. They just figured, well, there's going to be so we didn't show another gorilla. There was obviously another gorilla and another Kong And he had a, even though he, and then someone probably went, but he didn't even have genitals. Did you ever notice that? King Kong, you can't find his genitals?
Anyway. I try not to look at King Kong's business.
Okay.
Him and God.
And, well, that's the other thing with Godzilla. It's like, we don't know how to, how does he reproduce?
It's weird to look.
So there was a, yeah, okay, the son of God. So we just, he just turned into, but here's what brought this up again. The fact that the new one had, it with these little scenes where they showed some Japanese people and they showed this, and someone said he, you know, it's a secret that's been kept for years and years. There's something going on there with, that may connect the original to this. Because remember, and everything you said is, and I don't argue anything you said, or do I argue suspension or extension of belief or deception of belief or conception of belief or whatever you want to call it. but there's no doubt about the fact that in the original Gojira, 1954, he dies. He turns into a skeleton. So there's either another one or it's not him or whatever. And then we just go on from there and just like he didn't die. So, okay, I understand that's what they do and that's what they did. But I'm saying that I saw some things. I saw a bunch of, there's a bunch of trailers out there now. All you people want to go to YouTube. There's a bunch of trailers out there, different ones that are showing this new guy. And by the way, your friend Cranston is in it.
I wish he was my friend. Bryan Cranston, if you hear this, be my best friend. Because Bryan Cranston is fabulous. Yes, no, and he looks like he's just killing it.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, that alone, I'm like, I'll watch it for the Cranston because he's another one. It's like, if you don't love Bryan Cranston, what's wrong with you? You know, like that's on you.
I don't know when they started.
You don't love him.
I don't know when they started to make this thing or how they planned it or where they went about it. But, I think it's a great career move for him and then great for them because he, you know, at the time he was making it, he probably was still very big with how long was that Breaking Badly on? I call it Breaking Badly.
Several seasons. No, I mean, he's doing great. And, from my understanding, the director that they have for this, is a gentleman named Gareth Edwards. And he made a film called Monsters that, I have not seen yet. It's on my list, but I know of at least two people that I consider very credible. One of whom is, C.F. Roberts. The other whom is.
Hey, I know him.
You know, I'm pretty tired.
Isn't that Mr. Drain?
No, my God. There's only one drain. And my good friend, John, and both of them have seen it and, just raved about it. And these are two gentlemen whose opinions I respect immensely and they know what they're talking about. So Monsters, I want to see it. It sounds good. It, sounds great. So this guy has like, you know, he's got a good pedigree with the monster films. The trailer looks amazing.
Yeah.
The cast looks great. It looks like they're, you know, tonally, at least judging from the trailer, that it's keeping more in line with the 54 Godzilla, which I think is a good move. And, I'm pumped. I cannot wait to see it.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's going to be great. Let's knock on wood.
And I think it's a state of the art thing too, because I really think, some movies, you know, you can wait for, you can watch them on your screen. I don't care what kind of screens you got anywhere, but there are still certain movies that are state of the art. You want to see them in the movie. I already told my kids, I said, we're going. That's it. And we're going. That's it. We're going. I'll take you. We're going. That's it. We're going to see this and I hope and scream and so that they put the, you know, one thing I hate about movies is they don't make it loud enough. Is that just me? Is that just me or what? But you got to see that in an actual theater. And I don't think it's 3D. Is it?
I don't know if it wouldn't surprise me if they do like a 3D version because that seems to be kind of popular right now.
How do they do that? And they make
either way, it's going to be awesome, you know, in the theater.
Definitely. Unless, I don't know, they're keeping it so secret. There's always two ways to look at that. Number one, it's so good they don't want all the stuff to get out because they want people to get in. Or it's so bad that they want all the people to get in because they don't want to tell them and give it away. But it's been very, very quiet. In fact, when it showed up as any kind of a trailer already, I only think probably a scant number of people were aware that this was being done.
Well, I think a lot of people, I think the buzz was pretty big, at least in the film, like the cult horror film community, the buzz was pretty big about this being made, but there was very little. Yeah, they kept it pretty tight. There was like a preview shown at a convention, and that was pretty much kept under lid for a long time. And so we're really just now getting to see a proper, like a full on trailer for it. But, I don't know. I think in a way it's smart. It's building up tension. I mean, with doing something as iconic as Godzilla, I mean, it's kind of risky in some ways because especially being an American film, with the Western, a director I believe is British. You know, it's a little dicey. A lot of people are still like, still have a bad taste in their mouth from the 90s one with Matthew Broderick. So I think trying to keep more mystery, because I mean, that's the thing when the 98 Godzilla came out, you know, I mean, there was like fast food, commercialism. I mean, it was just really grossly handled. It was a shitty film. And, this one looks like, you know, whether it's good or not, you know, you have to wait to see it, but at least looks like there's a lot more care and respect, you know, for the material that's at hand here.
I always look at, even though I understand, I don't mean to bring this up and harp at it or beat it to death, but suspension of belief, things go through my mind. I can't help. They go through my mind. I look at them, I think about them. But oddly enough, when they had that horrible tsunami over there, in 11, was that 2011? I think. When they had that, I thought to myself, I'm a child, I'm an air raid warden. I'm not that old. you know, when school we used to have drills. They used to make us hide under the desks. And I would get under the desk and I'd go, this desk is going to protect me from an atom bomb. I never understood. I always thought outside of whatever box they were putting me into. But when that tsunami came about, I thought to myself, hey, how come Godzilla got to walk, this gigantic thing got to walk out of the water and onto the shores of Japan? And there was hardly a splash. wouldn't he have been, I know what you're doing, Heather. I know you're sitting there going, this isn't even something we should discuss, Frank.
No.
are you nuts thinking about this? I'm saying Godzilla, goes on to land. I've never seen a version or any one of the movies where he comes on land and this giant wave follows him. Now remember how much noise, water noise he made in the Ronald Emmerich one. At least there was a lot of, and then that water didn't even go anywhere. Who knows? You know, it turned into rain. But I think Godzilla, in all of his might, would have caused a tsunami just walking on to land. Yeah, and you're going, I know, you're sitting there going, so what, Frank? We're talking about.
No.
I know. You see how weird it is with me? These things come in my mind, and I want to even create answers, you know? I do suspend my belief, but I'm the kind of guy, listen, this is the kind of guy am I. Do you know the end of Goldfinger where Bond is in, trapped and tied to the machine there?
Vaguely, yeah, I haven't seen Goldfinger since I was a kid.
Well, they leave him in with the nuclear bomb. They leave him in there with Oddjob, who is the Goldfinger's, you know, gigantic Japanese sumo wrestler bodyguard or what have you. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they're showing how long there's a clock on the nuclear, on the nuclear weapon, on the big, this big case. It's a clock and the clock ticks. And it, because when it gets to 0000, it's going to blow up, right? Okay.
Right.
Okay. So from the moment they turn it on, and this didn't happen the first time I watched the movie. Maybe it happened the third or fourth time. By the fourth time, I was counting. And I was counting when it went on, and then they'd go back to it and they'd show you how many seconds were left, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's never any real time involved in that. That it's completely off. That bomb went off twice before they managed to stop it, and of course stopped it at 007, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is the kind of nut we're talking about here. I'm admitting this. I mean, I'm sitting there counting. I'm counting it, and I'm thinking that if we did this fake stuff as with more realism, I wonder what it would present that would help the drama or the excitement of it, as opposed to just rolling over these things. And as a writer, I do think of that in many ways.
Well, sure. Yeah, no, there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I mean, kind of the beauty about film and art in general is, you know, when you get really excited about something and it stirs your brain, you start thinking in terms of, you know,
yeah, but
like, what if?
But nobody, I haven't heard, and I haven't talked to anybody who ever mentioned Godzilla who would say to me, did you ever notice how that he should have caused a tsunami? For God's sakes. I mean, those feet, and you hear the sounds. Remember the sounds?
Oh, of course.
Boom, boom, boom. And as he's doing that on the ocean floor when he's coming into the, when he's coming onto the beach and there's not even a wave. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying. Why do I bring this up? I'm not trying to destroy the, I have not come to bury Godzilla. I have come to praise him. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, and there's probably some exceptions to that. I'm trying to think. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting. I don't know if there was ever a flat out tsunami caused by Godzilla emerging from the ocean, but I mean, some films are more dramatic than others. Yeah. I think the new one's definitely going to add some new, hopefully add some kind of interesting new twist to it. We shall see, but,
I'm just going to bring up another stupid thing, but okay. this is something we all do. And I often wonder, I mean, if I got to talk to Steven Spielberg, I would ask these questions because they bother me. And that is, in the original King Kong changes sizes about a dozen times, right? He does.
Okay.
And so in relationship to how big he's supposed to be and everything else around him, but we don't notice that, you know, if he was climbing up the Empire State Building at the distance that we saw him when we saw the entire Empire State Building, we wouldn't see him. But they had to make him bigger so that you could see him climbing the Empire State Building. And then when he's in New York, he's shorter and he's bigger on the island. These are just things that happen because they happen, and people don't look at it illusion. That's what I'm doing. I'm looking at illusion with a sense of reality. Now, Godzilla is supposed to be, according to what it said in the original, a 164 foot tall radioactive breath. Now, when I was a kid, I just thought it was fire. I had no idea that, and this is from the original publicity stuff. They said radioactive breath because, as I said before, I don't think they wanted to say he was radioactive, you know, related to the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
They say he was revived thanks to nuclear testing. But here's the thing: 164 feet, and I try to wonder how many. Even a lot bigger than that in some of those. But, I mean, wasn't he, even in the first one, that was only 164 feet? Did he change? Do you think he changed size? If we watched that original one and precisely for what I'm talking about, would we find a great number of, I guess these are, you know, all films have mistakes and boners and stuff, right?
Oh, well, it's going to happen. I mean, yeah, I'm sure he increased in size since the first one. I mean, I don't have any hard math on that, but yeah, of course. I mean, in some cases it might make sense because, you know, in some cases Godzilla, you know, his origin might have, you know, changed a little bit, or just, you know, he came back from,
but in the same film,
being dead, or I don't know. I mean, there could be just a whole host of reasons.
Right, but in the same film, because of specs and the technical things, he might have changed sizes. Am I ruining this whole subject and topic?
No, not going into this. You're on a roll. I'm just enjoying it.
I realize how dumb it, because it's like, sit back and enjoy it. Why are you analyzing this? Looking at it. Well, as far as analyzing it is concerned, though, obviously, the you know as well as I do that German movies after World War II displayed, many German movies displayed a great guilt for what happened, and you could see that in Fassbinder films, right? There's a couple of movies, there's more than a couple of movies, referring anywhere near to the Nazi era, that there's a great guilt in what happened in Germany, and filmmakers brought that up. And yet, I don't think this is, the Godzilla is created, and he's the first, that's, I think, the only, that's the only metaphor of the bombs that appear in films. Am I wrong, or have you any other evidence of Kurosawa never did anything based on that?
Well, a number of Japanese films though did later on. I mean, kind of confront that era directly. Though there's an anime called, I believe, Graveyard of the Fireflies, that deals with like direct aftermath of atomic. I mean, and there's a number of other films that deal with the aftermath. Quite a few. You tend to almost see it more, I think, in anime, strangely enough, but, I'm sure there have been live action films. But I think there's a little bit of a difference because like with Germany, you know, and World War II, you know, the relationship with that's a lot more, you know, it's all complicated, but I mean, it's like they're, you know, dealing directly with the Holocaust.
Well, that's what I meant about guilt.
There's going to be more guilt about that. Yeah. Whereas Japan, the bomb was something that was done to them, yeah. Not something they did to somebody. Now, granted, there are a lot of human rights issues with, you know, with the side of Japan against the Chinese, in World War II. That's a whole other episode.
Right.
But as far as the A-bomb, I mean, that was something that was done to them as opposed to something they did. So I think that's a little easier. I mean, it's still a dark, really painful thing to explore. The fact that Godzilla was made in a handful of years after that happened, I think is pretty amazing. But I think art, that's the beauty of art, is it's our way as a species to process a lot of different emotions. That could be happiness, love, lust, humor, but it could also be like, hey, something really traumatic and horrible has happened to you. Art's a way to cope with it and to deal with it and confront it in a way that makes it livable, you know?
I hope everybody out there just wrote that down because Heather just put a hammer on that, a nail, and put it right through there about our art. You're absolutely correct, and I was always told that. And I think, well, I don't know if it was, no, it wasn't Hemingway. It was someone else who said, Hold on. I think I have this quote here because you bring up an incredibly true thing. Oh, great. Now I'm going to look for this through here. It has to do with what you said about art. I wish everyone had written that down.
And we will test all of you lovely listeners.
Heather, by the way, in case you're just tuning in, and I know you're not, Heather Drain is with us again. We try to get Heather on here as much as possible, but she's currently so busy, and she's writing a big book with Eric Edwards. And if you don't know Eric Edwards, you should look at, write that name down and go to Google or Yahoo. Or something. I'm looking for this wonderful. Okay, before that, this wonderful quote about the job of a writer. It has, and this is a lot to do with what you, or as an artist, or an artist per se, and it's terribly. See, nobody does this. You don't see. You never saw Larry King. Not that I would want to compare myself to Larry King, but you never saw him suddenly looking through notes saying, "Wait a second, I don't have a."
Well, Larry King, but no, this is, in fairness, Larry King also has, like, interns, assistants, you know, and all of that jazz.
You're
more pure.
Thank you.
Larry King, you're doing this out of straight love. That's the only reason to do anything in life, really.
And it's the only way you can call me pure, right there, too. Mrs. Heather Drain, the web, we're not done yet, but I want to tell everybody the blog is, tell them where else, you do that while I'm still looking for this. Tell them where all the places they could find you on the web.
Well, Right, currently, right now, the two places, two best places you can find me is you can find my writing at, I'm one of the contributors for the fabulous, pop culture and political site called dangerousminds.net. Definitely check that. Also, my own, my blog, mondoheather.blogspot.com. And, you can also find, examples of my work in print with such magazines as, Paris Cinema, which actually I'm also on their website. I do a feature called Dotes in the Back Room. So Paris Cinema, check that out. And I've also in the past written for Video Watchdog, Scream, Lunch Meat, and another of fabulous, fabulous things. There's some new stuff. Also, while you're looking for, are you still looking for that quote?
Yeah, go ahead. Take over.
I'll throw in a quick plug. There is an upcoming, magazine called Art Decades. That is currently in the works, and I'm one of the contributors, and it's being put together by the fabulous Jeremy Ritchie. And Jeremy's a fine writer, and he's assembled just an absolute amazing core group of writers, artists, photographers. And if you love art in all of its different forms, if you love art that's challenging and unique, this is going to be the magazine for you. So definitely Art Decades, look that up.
Wow, I got Art Decades?
Art Decades, yes.
That sounds like a good I'm running into the possibility that I can't find this quote, but it's
you're gonna find it when we're done with this interview. That's what's gonna happen.
If I'd have thought we would get,
how it goes.
I never know. You know, we just go where we go when we don't know that we're going to go to these places. So we don't, maybe, you know what? I thought it was in the, maybe it's not even in this book. Who knows? I have so many of these notebooks, but I will continue to just flip through this as we talk here though now, because we're not done. What was your problem with, Roland Emmerich's?
I never finished it, to be honest with you. I didn't make it very far into it.
Really? Okay.
I just honestly thought it was shitty. It was classic, Hollywood, let's make a cash in effort. You know, it was a bit like, films like that to me, it's kind of like going to, a strip club and getting the most bored lap dance. You know, like you can tell, sure, the girl's grinding on you or the guy's grinding on you, but the look of their face is complete stone cold boredom. It's all about getting your money. They're not even into you for fun, or for a joke.
Right.
It's just complete cynical. It's whorishness kind of at its worst. And,
boy, if I had a nickel for every lap dance like that, huh?
Oh, thank God. That's disgusting.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
Poor man.
So you didn't get through that.
No, I didn't see the point, to be honest. I was very cranky.
I thought, you know, if you, and I was going to actually do a show, and I may do it one time if I may not do it. But all of Roland Emmerich's, scripts, which he takes part in, whether they're historic or not, as was the case on The Patriot, which is based on a real man, every one has the same format to it, and Godzilla is no different in terms of characters. And if you watch all of his movies, you see the same, he's got a template. And when it came to doing Godzilla, I think you're right. I think they said, like, well, we got the name, and we got the CGI, and let's make it American. And of course, his only reference, and I don't know him, but his only reference in that seemed to be, like you said, the Jurassic Park element. And how, you know, that almost comic, and that's where Matthew Broderick comes in, right? That almost comic fighting of, you know, the normal person against the gigantic beast.
Yeah, which is kind of, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous because, I mean, with the Japanese films, it's not quite that cut and dry. I mean, yeah, I mean, man is trying to fight these monsters.
And they connected, Emmerich connected it to Chernobyl. Because that's why they get Matthew Broderick, the main character. They get him involved because he's looking at how worms are mutating after the Chernobyl accident. So somehow they connect that to this other creature, who is, by the way, asexual.
Ah.
And they set that movie up for a sequel, but they never got there.
Oh, of course they did. Actually, what's funny is there is a slight reference to that Godzilla in Godzilla Final Wars, which was the last Japanese made Godzilla film.
Mm-hmm.
And Godzilla Final Wars is, if you love monster movies, like if you're a big fan of, say, Destroy All Monsters, which was made in the mid-60s. That one had, like, a whole ton of kaiju, and it's awesome, especially for me because I'm all about the monsters. Mm-hmm. It's the Final Wars, there's actually the Godzilla from the 1988 film pops up briefly and gets his ass handed to him by the real thing. And that's, you know, if you're a nerd like me, that's a pretty hot moment right there.
I like when you see, she's got it. Heather's got it. When is it?
I pay Frank very handsomely, by the way.
No. What's the timeline on this Eric Edwards project?
We're hoping to have it out by early next year. We're still in the middle of working on it, but that's the goal, and that's our personal deadline. So, and I think everybody's going to be really happy. We're doing, I don't want to give too much away, but our format's going to be unique for biography. It's not going to be your cut and dry. Typical biography, you know, Eric's not a typical mm-hmm. artist or a man by any means, so we wanted to do something that reflected mm-hmm. His unique spirit.
Well, okay. Well, we'll talk more about that, and we hope we can get Eric. How old is Eric now?
He's 68. He just turned 68 a few months ago.
Whew, he's older than me. I'm so glad.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Well,
you guys, age
is in the body, but age is also in the mind.
Well, I've lost my mind a long time ago, so how old does that make me?
You and me, sweetie. Mind, what's that?
What else is happening in the world of underground? Because, I mean, you know, we're talking about the new Godzilla. We're talking about a major motion picture. We're talking about underground stuff. What's happening? Oh, you know what I want to mention to you? Speaking of Germans and stuff, maybe we could do a show on this somewhere, but I know I ran into a movie the other day. I had to talk to you about it. I said, you know, if anybody ever saw this movie, it was you. But I was looking through the career. I was looking on the movie, the database. Mm-hmm. I was looking for Dominique Swain. Do you know Dominique Swain?
The only film that I have seen with Dominique Swain, and to be honest, it's probably the best known thing she's done, is the Adrienne Lynn version of Lolita.
Right. That's why I was looking for her. Because I was looking to see where else she had done anything. Well, you have, and if that, then you don't know that I'm going to turn you on to a movie I want you to somehow see, and I'm going to try to somehow see. She's in this movie in 2012. And this has got to be one of the contemporary weird, you know, whatever we call this genre that you deal with. It's called Nazis at the Center of the Earth. Do you know about that movie?
I've actually heard of this.
I knew if anybody heard it. You heard about it. You've heard about that movie.
I've heard of the title, actually. I think of all people, my parents had mentioned it to me because they were like, hey, that sounds like something you'd watch. And I was like, I don't know how to take that with their, you know, people. Sometimes it depends on how people say that to you. My parents are very lovely people, for the record. But you never know. It's kind of like, you know, hey, is that a compliment? Do you want to take this outside? What do you mean by this? You know?
You should go to IGBM. Everyone should go to International. I always miss, I'm like dyslexic when it comes to that website. IMDb.
IMDb.
Yeah. You should go there because the trailer is on the page for the movie.
Uh-huh.
And look at it. It's not a cheesy, it wasn't put together like a cheesy movie. It looks like it could be one of the, you know, crazy classics that you talk about. And yet and the fact that you know about it, I understand, and I think that does not surprise me, but I thought you might have seen, you'd be the only person I know I've seen. I never even heard of it, but Dominique Swain is in that movie. And that's mm-hmm. well after Lolita.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was 12 years later.
Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, that was in the 90s, so.
Well, so then She's probably in a bunch of those movies. Hey, you know, Ed, check this out. I'm going to tell you this too. Guess who is following me on Twitter?
Me. I know I am.
Oh, I know you. I know you.
A lot of people are following you. Who particularly is following you?
Well, one day I wake up and who's there but Linnea Quigley.
Oh, I was wondering if Linnea was going to come up because, you know, I think every episode I've done with you, I've been on the show numerous times. Linnea comes up every, I don't think we've done one episode where she has not come up.
I know, what a thing to have on my resume. So, you know, I give her a direct message, and I said, I don't know if you remember me per se, but, you know, I told her about the movie and I was the writer. I wrote the dialogue and then she was there and I was the audition, when we auditioned her and she got the part for this minor part in this AFI movie and she didn't write back to me.
Oh no.
And I'm
with some celebrities though, how much they're really, you know what I mean? Like it could be like, you know, she's a busy lazy. Maybe it's like her assistant doing it.
Mm. Oh, you mean Twitter, Twitter.
Yeah.
That I don't know. I was like, hey, yeah. So I had to write her, and she had, you know, a lot of them don't have direct messages because they don't want all that email.
Right.
But she had it, so I wrote, and she never got back to me. So I'm gonna write to her again. I'd love to have her on it, and it would be great if we could have a combination. I mean, it's not called combination. It's called what? A conference. You can hear, I'm still, look at me, I am just...
A combo call.
Yeah, and I'm still, 3-way is what we're, I'm still going through this, I'll find it again someday, I'll find it someday.
Well, yes, because actually I'm perfectly fine with Linnea coming up because she's, you know, I always she's have great. That's a good thing to say, she's great.
Yeah, so those are things I wanted to tell you. As we move along, I don't know what else is anything else happening. As I mentioned in the waning minutes, we have happening in the in tell us stuff. Now we got
well,
you got six, 7 minutes here.
Yeah,
go go.
You still there?
Yeah, I mean go tell us stuff.
Okay. I recently just put up a piece on Mondo Heather about. Because I usually write about older films, but I recently, actually thanks to my aforementioned friend, John Skip had mentioned, he had showed me a film called Isle of Dogs and, made by Tammy Sutton. And this film, it's going to be getting released this year. It's done the festival circuit, but it's a brilliant, absolutely brilliant, like British, it's like if a British crime film, you know, like The Crave.
Oh yeah.
Like a
yeah.
British gangster film. But it's also like an Italian giallo, like a horror film, kind of combined. It's two very distinctive styles merged together beautifully. It's a really smart, just exquisitely made film. I wrote about that recently. And as far as like newer films, there's this one I think at this point is about a year or two old, but one that I wrote about for Dangerous Minds a few months ago was a film called The Ghastly Love of Johnny X, and I think you would love it, Frank. Ooh. It's a 50s style sci-fi musical.
Okay.
It's brilliant. It's so great. It stars Will Keenan, who is fabulous in everything. And it's got Reggie Bannister, who I'm a huge fan of as well. Reggie Bannister is probably best known for his work in the Phantasm series. But he's terrific, and Paul Williams is in it, you know, the great Paul Williams, the singer-songwriter.
Sure, that guy.
Who doesn't love Paul Williams? He was a Phantom of the Paradise, which is another film I love, among others. It's a great cast, a great film, a lot of fun. If you love, it's got Creed Bratton from The Office, too. And it's a fun film. If you love, like, flying saucer rock and roll like I do, definitely check out The Ghastly Love of Johnny X.
And where do we find these things?
Ghastly is out on DVD, so you can rent that or, you know, buy it. I'm sure you can watch on video demand online as well. Isle of Dogs is, that's about to get a big release, on DVD. You can, I think you might be able to see it on video on demand. But it's about to get a big release, and it's amazing. It's, you know,
Isle of Dogs. It's funny. You talk about World of Dogs, which is Mondrakani. This is Isle of Dogs.
It is. Yeah.
That's what Mondrakani means, right? World of Dogs.
It's a dog's world.
Dog's world. It's a dog's world. But it wouldn't be nothing without a bitch or... No, that's James
Brown. Whoa!
That's the way James Brown was. It's a man's world. It'll be nothing. It was a dog's world. It'll be nothing. Heather, once again, I certainly appreciate your being here and filling up this. It's fascinating.
That's a pleasure, Frank. Thank you so much for having me on.
By the way, I haven't heard from Shannon. No, nobody had this right then, so I'm still waiting to hear from Shannon.
So I need to email her anyway, so I'll let her.
I lost her email. Send me her email.
I will do that.
Send me her email, and then I'll find a way to get back in touch with her. She's really in New Mexico. She's been on the show.
She's a great guest. She's a brilliant lady.
Yeah, and she has that voice. I always, I tried to get her to get into radio, but she couldn't get past her Spider-Man phone. I don't know. It's a long story. Heather Drain, you can get her at here because she'll be back again as soon as
absolutely
right, and we'll talk about all sorts of things going on, and you can get her at Mondo Heather, and follow her at Mondo Heather. Get your Twitter, get it out. They all have it out already. They're doing it as they listen, right?
Absolutely, yeah. You can find me on Twitter, and so feel free to follow me thank you so much. Yeah, thank you, Frank, and thank you to everybody listening. Yeah.
Don't worry about it. We'll keep it all alive. Thank you. Heather, say hello to CF for me, and we'll talk with you next time. Be healthy, be safe. You were sick there for a while too. I had a couple of colds. I had a cold or something.
It was a rough winter.
Yeah, it's been even down there, right?
I'm ready for spring.
Okay. Well, we'll get into it. Thank you, dear. We love you, and we'll be back again with you.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you so much, and have a lovely night.
Bonsoir, my dear.
Bonsoir.
Heather Drain, everyone. As you can go read all that stuff, you should, because it's good stuff. My name is Frank Cotola, a man whose name adorns the title of the show. Next week, what are we talking about? I think I'm just timing some stuff here in my head. Next week is Mr. Tom Savino. We'll talk about something. The blog is get me at Frankatolo at not I'm not Frankatolo at yeah no Facebook you know Facebook Frankatolo and I'll be a friend. I'll be a friend of yours. And what was I talking about? CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com at Frankatolo. And the new thing now, go to follow at Daily Meds with a Z, at Daily Meds with a Z, and you could you'll have fun with that. And what else? I don't know what else we got going. Let's see. Whatever the case may be, we'll just have to deal with it as it goes along. Commander Cotolo here. I like it. I don't like it that way though. I don't like it like that. That cartoon character. What was his name? Commander Cuckoo. Does anyone remember that one? And why doesn't anyone answer me when I say that? My name is Frank Cotolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Thank you very much, Heather Drain. Always great having you on. Next week, Tom Savino. Week after that, Kurt Brando from the Arab Emirates. Talk about those bitcoins or whatever. And any other things. Funny guy, funny man, everything that goes on with that. I'll see you. I'll be around because the net is available and you can talk to me, fcatolo@yahoo.com, or over there, or leave me a post, or be my friend, or follow me, or do all the stuff that needs to be done because that's what we're here for. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you are located this evening. We've done a lot of talking and it's time to go because I have nothing more to say.